good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Cantlin. I'm the CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Very exciting new format today, potential to go on national radio. I'm excited about the opportunity. And in a few minutes, we'll be talking with Chris Hanna, who's a personal financial coach, and we're going to answer questions about what it means to be a coach. I'm obviously a financial advisor. If you followed our blog and followed us at www.prosperityfinancialgroup, please do so. Send us a note. This is an entertainment show. This is not designed to give you specific advice. We are thrilled to give you specific advice. My direct line is 925-314-8503. And if you want to send me a note, if you want to email me at Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at Prosperity Financial Group, you can. And if you have questions for Chris or want to reach Chris, our guest, who I'll introduce in a few minutes, you can go through me and I will forward them to him. Gladly do that. That's why we have guests on the radio. So let me tell you a little bit about what's happening. Spend a few minutes before we go to Chris. And this is an entertainment show and an entertainment of business and not the business of entertainment. So we're not talking about the entertainment industry. We're talking about the world. We're talking about how it affects people making money and losing money and what's going on around us and personal finance and developing financial goals. And what is a financial goal compared with a life goal? What's the difference between them? And we recommend and we urge you to reach out because they're different. We're different than what's out there because we're not going to give you a Gobi Desert of dryness. We're going to bring it in an entertaining way with relevant topics that mean something that is sanguine and salient to your life. So let's get going on a few things. Yesterday, if you didn't know that, and I know you might be listening to this a week or two later, yesterday was one of the biggest stock market bounce backs in our lifetime. I think it was in our lifetime. There was a 4 and 5%. Chris is a personal financial coach. That's different than a financial advisor. He's not licensed. He doesn't give specific investment advice. He coaches. That's a little bit different. You know, I have a gym coach. Yeah. Why? Because that gym coach motivates me to do a better job at the gym. And I've lost 34 pounds at the gym since July. I don't know if I wouldn't have done, I don't know if I would have done that without a coach. So coaches can make a difference. Does everybody need a coach? Nope. I'm at the gym. Not everybody needs a coach. Lots of great workout people at the gym. Same thing with finances. There are people with great discipline, great ideas, great direction on their life, and they don't need it. So let's just talk about what a coach does. And Chris, let me welcome you to the show.
Hey, Elliot. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm happy to dive into sort of what a coach does if you'd like me to.
Let's start with that. Please do that.
Yeah. So interesting that you bring up the fitness coach. I mean, a financial coaching is very much akin to, you know, a personal trainer for your financial health. So, you know, I'm your accountability partner. I help you build strong financial habits, see your whole financial picture very clearly so that you can really understand what's going on. And I work with you on a high touch basis, meaning that while we have our regularly scheduled calls, you also have access to text me between those calls when you have questions or when you need someone to tell you not to go blow another 10 grand at the blackjack tables and instead go spend it on your partner, your kids, or what have you. So yeah, coaching is definitely different in that way. Like you said, I'm not a money manager. So I'm not managing your money or your investments for you or advising them. Your team and firm over at Prosperity Financials is going to do that much better than I would.
So I know, Chris, that, and I work with some celebrities and some sports people, and I know you spend a lot of time with UFC people and sports people. And there are some horrible facts in that world. And that is about 4 or 5 years out of retirement of the NFL or Major League Baseball, and probably UFC as well, these people are broke. It's sad. They've got entourages. I remember Floyd Patterson when I was young, and Joe Louis had to fight again out of retirement because they had no money. It's just sad. And you do hear about the people that make a lot of money, and these are the people on TV, and everybody thinks that, you know, you're going to leave with $25 million and, you know, Patrick Mahomes has made $25 million this year. So, you know, he's set for life and so forth. But the reality is so different. So I know with sports stars, why don't you tell me the state of mind, how you get in that business of dealing with sports people? Because really, we're all sports people at heart, even though we don't have that talent, but we don't want to end up like that. We want the glory. We want the fame. We want the shooting stars. We love that as people. We watch entertainment tonight because we want to be, you know, I don't want to say Alec Baldwin. That's probably the bad example of that, but we want to be a star here. We want all the fame and fortune of stardom, yet it's not all cut out how we think it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's really a two-part sort of approach to how I got into that. The first is, you know, despite it's kind of crazy to think that athletes who are getting paid all this money, yes, many of them aren't managing it well and they end up broke maybe 4 or 5 years after they leave. But what really hit me is that I come from a background in finance and economics. That's what my degree is in. You know, I had an internship on at a multi-billion dollar hedge fund and some training on Wall Street. And despite that, 2 years after I graduated with that degree, I was just felt, I just found myself completely lost when it came to my personal finances. And it probably hit me harder than most, particularly, let's say, an athlete who has never spent time studying finance. It hit me hard because I felt like I should know what to do with my money. I should have a clear understanding of what to do with it, how to track it, how to make good decisions and stick to them. And so it was actually from that point that I decided that I needed to take a closer look at my personal finances and how to really master them, because it's not something that you learn in regular school or even in college with a finance and economics degree. So from there, that's when I started really looking at personal finances for several years, eventually developed this skill in managing money, creating a system that allows you to make good decisions, stick to them, and track and organize your money in an efficient way. That's when I decided I wanted to start helping others. And I had been a fan of the UFC for years. I had trained jiu-jitsu myself, which is the grappling martial art in MMA, which is what they fight in the UFC. And I was aware that they UFC fighters only fought and got paid maybe 2 or 3 times a year. So you're talking about, you know, you've got different aspects of the sport industry who are getting paid a lot. But here now in the UFC, not only are they getting paid a lot, but they're not getting paid very often at all. And that brought in a brand new sort of variable that I said, oh, this is the first group of people that I want to start working with. And that's sort of just kind of how I came into that space.
Wow, that's exciting. So are you working with other people besides UFC people, or is this the niche that you've developed?
I've started with UFC fighters. I'm now open to expanding. I wanted to start with that niche because I just knew that it was an easy one to start with, in the sense that I could really tailor my messaging to them, a very specific group of people. But the more that I've worked with them, the more that I've realized that there are lots of people who just have really highly variable income, particularly entrepreneurs who just aren't used to paying their own taxes and you know, everything that that entails, and the traps that you can get in when you're not used to handling your taxes on your own. So yeah, started with them, but now expanding to others.
Wow, exciting stuff. So these are smart people. They do well in their jobs. We're not talking about low IQ people. We're not talking about, you know, the people that don't watch TV or don't get it. They get it and they want their money. So what are typical mistakes that, because what they make, everybody else makes, what are the typical mistakes that professional athletes are making to not keep their money when they need it most?
Yeah, a couple of things. So the first is probably not setting aside their own taxes. This is of course true for independent contractors like UFC fighters, like NFL players, or even entertainers. And the problem with that is not isolated. You know, so the first time that you rack up a big tax bill and don't proactively set money aside to pay that, you are now in a hole. And that means that not only do you have to pay that back, but come next year when your tax bill is due, you've already started earning for the next year. And anything that you earn, you've got to dig yourself out of that hole. It's this vicious cycle that I have seen fighters get caught up in just for years. I'm talking 4 or 5 years or more in back taxes that they're struggling to pay up in, that they really could have avoided if they simply set aside an estimated amount for taxes from the first time that they earn money. That's probably one of the biggest things. And the other is not really actively deciding what to do with their money when they receive it. And this is true not just for fighters and athletes, but for other folks. When you receive money, you have an opportunity to decide what to do with it before you actually spend it. And most people don't.
You know, Chris, as I translate what you're saying into the reality of our clients and our prospects and so forth and so on, one of the deficiencies in the industry that I'm in is when you do financial planning, and there are about five pieces of software out there that do competent financial planning, some are more math oriented, some are more illustrative oriented. But if you just do it based on the program, then the math will work out or not work out, and you'll get a red or a green or yellow, and there are online programs and there are programs and so forth. But the question that so many people forget to ask in our business, and I think you feel it when you're dealing with these short-term, I'm going to call it short-term careers especially, which is sports, is that, okay, you know how to do your job really well. You know, in this case, you know you need to be at the gym X times. You know you need to be sparring. You know, if you're in baseball, you know to be at the batting cages. If you're in a football world, you know you need to be on the field or at the gym and eating well. And, you know, how many Tom Brady's are out there? Very few that are the full package of everybody. Most people do some of it. And, you know, a lineman's world at 325 pounds is different than Tom Brady's world. Right? But one thing that they all fall short on, and I know you feel this in your world, is developing goals that are beyond the next 12 months, beyond the next 3 years. And all the software out there won't help you do that because they all work on financial goals. And in reality, and what we try to accent at our business, and I've been doing this now for 29 years, what we try to accent, Chris, is developing life goals. And a life goal is, what do I want to do at a certain point in my life? And then the financial goal is, how do I get there? And then in your world, okay, you've got X number of years in your to earn this money. And that's not actually true. To earn the big money, you've got X number of years. But there is life after 32 years old or 38 years old or 42. We've learned that. But for so many, again, athletes, and why they're so broke is that short-term thinking is so pervasive and so cancerous at the same time that they can't think about life after that, or they think, well, I'll just become an announcer. I'll just be on NBC, and who wouldn't want me with my face and my voice? This is easy. And you know that's not real. And so when you're talking to people about that short-term versus the long-term, and can we put some money aside besides just paying taxes, which is really the short-term world, oh my goodness, I haven't saved, I spent all my tax money. You've got really a hard place to go anywhere on that. Although the IRS has become very forgiving these days, which is good. How do you deal with that state of mind?
Well, it's a great point that you bring up, that it's the long-term thinking and the long-term goals and differentiating the two between lifestyle and financial goals is one of the root sort of questions or mindsets that you really need to address before a lot of the other shorter term actions fall into place. So, in the same way, like in the same way that you differentiate the two, I think about lifestyle goals also as like, how do you want to feel? You know, like how is your health? How are your relationships with your, you know, your parents, your kids, your family? And not only do you want to be using your money to reach these longer term goals in the future, that numbers that you can see on a spreadsheet or on a piece of paper, but what kind of relationships do you want to have in 20 years? And how are you investing? How are you using your money creatively to, you know, invest in that or in your health, whatever it might be? Yeah, I really think that the long-term thinking is what people should really start with more. But in reality, there's so much short-term, especially when you're making all that money, you feel like it's going to last forever. And, you know, the last thing on your mind is what you want to do in the next 10, 20, or you know, 40 years.
Yeah. You know, I remember Chris talking to a professional baseball player, and he and his wife bought his and her Navigators. And I said, I think you should return one of them. And boy, were they angry with me. And I said, I don't think you understand. If you need them, I'm all in favor of them. Hey, I've had a Navigator. I drive an Aviator. I'm a Buy American Lincoln person. I get admit that. But that was a quick $120,000, $140,000 of cars. And I'm thinking you're coming to the end of your career here. And so how do you deal with it, Chris? Because in our world, you have to be a little bit of a psychologist too. and unlicensed. We give no psychology advice here on this show, but we have to deal with that. And we call that behavioral science, behavioral finance. And egos can run amok. They run amok in sports. They run amok in finance. Whatever I'm making this year, I'm going to make it for the next 50 years. But that's not the reality. So what are some good tools that you've seen to help people out to get their ego back to earth?
That's a great question. I mean, one of the first things that comes to mind is sort of an even deeper level realization that I think underlies a lot of these sort of tools or actions that you might want to take. And that is that once you really understand what you can do with your money and what your money can do for you, you will never handle it the same way again. So, you know, when someone says they've got a spending problem, I look at that and say, you know what, that might be true. But what might be more true is that you don't really understand how far your money can go. That $120,000 that you spent on a new car, you don't realize that compounded over the next, you know, 25, 40 years can turn into multi-millions. So I start there, just explaining, helping people understand what their money can really do for them. And then in terms of actionable steps, tools that you can use, really taking a holistic approach or taking a holistic view of your finances is really the first step. You've got to kind of see where you're at first in order to set some lifestyle and financial goals so you know where you're trying to go. And then from there, you can start making strategic decisions about what to do with your money based on those things. People are trying to, you know, make these financial decisions without a clear holistic understanding of where they sit, what their assets and liabilities are, you know, what their income and expenses look like. And it's difficult to really make good decisions without that knowledge.
So I know you have a trick that you use with bank accounts, getting people to think about that. And I know it's a mind trick because some of this you have to do to get people to think properly is a mind trick, no doubt about that. So tell me what that is.
Yeah. So when you are wanting to use your money in the most effective way possible to live the life of your dreams in whichever way that impacts you and your family and friends and even strangers around the world, what you need to do is budget. When in reality, budgeting is just a very small part of the picture. So really what you want to do is decide what to do with your money. You need to make sure that you're ensuring that you stick to those decisions. And you need to be able to track and organize those decisions and your money in an efficient and organized way. The reason that I use bank accounts to really support that is because without them, you know, when you're only using one primary checking account for all of your spending, the best that you can do is create a plan for your money, typically by going to Google and looking up a budget template or whatever it might be. And then you necessarily have to track every single expense, categorize it, and then subtract it from your original budgeted amount in order to know how much you have left to spend in that category from your one bucket, your one checking account. The way that you evolve past that is by recognizing that, hey, if I actually have, let's say, three spending accounts, I can decide the core aspects of what I want to spend my money on. Let's call it your fixed expenses, your variable needs and wants. And if you can decide how much you want to use for each of those, let's say on a monthly basis, you can transfer money into those accounts. And as long as you only use each account for its intended purpose, you are ensuring that you stick to your decision and you don't have the sort of tedious task of having to track every single expense, which is ultimately not even sustainable in the long run.
So I know clients come to us or prospects come to us, and I feel sad because they're 50 years old. And they have $50,000 in savings. Some of them are 60 years old and they have $50,000. We can't really do a lot for them. Mm-hmm. I can't work with them. I don't have the ability. I have, you know, other people here that can. It's a discipline they didn't have when they needed it. And so when I hear you talk about templates and budgeting, really what you're talking about is they don't have the discipline. And maybe the software, the iPhone, will help them get the discipline. Is that really where you're going with this?
And I look at it in two ways. Like if you think about wanting to have be more physically fit, there is the side of it where you've got to be motivated and disciplined to actually get to the gym. And then there's the other side of it where you've got to ask yourself how easy or difficult am I making the habit of working out? You know, so you might very well have strong motivations and strong discipline, but if the gym that you need to go to is 45 minutes away, you're not going to go there very often. And if on the contrary, if the gym is, you know, in your house, but you don't have the motivation or the discipline to go on a consistent basis, you're also not going to go consistently. So you've really got to have both. You've got to have the internal, you know, you got to have that self-motivation. A personal trainer or a financial coach can help with things like that, but you've really got to have both. And so when it comes to your financial fitness, the sort of banking design, that system helps you with the sort of the second part. It's bringing everything closer, making it easier so that when you do have the motivation and the discipline, you can follow through with it.
Great. So we're talking right now with Chris Hanna, who's a personal financial coach, on the East Coast. Where are you located?
Just north of DC. I'm about an hour north in Frederick, Maryland.
Terrific. A Maryland guy. And I'm Elliot Callen, and I am CEO of Prosperity Financial Group. If you'd like to send us a message, I'm at Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at prosperityfinancialgroup.com. The website is prosperityfinancialgroup.com. This is a show dedicated to bring interesting ideas, topics in the financial and in a world in an entertaining way. We do not give specific advice on our podcasts. If you need that, call me, 925-314-8503. So Chris, let's keep going here. We've got about another 15 or so minutes, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. And so I know you're a big fan of investing in yourself. And outside of just buying something for your phone here and there's got to be more to investing in yourself than just that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so investing in yourself is really about using your money creatively to create a better life for yourself. So again, like we were saying before, your life and even your financial goals, you know, everything is not a number on a spreadsheet. It's about the day-to-day, you know, how happy are you with your health? How happy are you with your relationships? You know, how well can you actually generate income? Because investing is a whole nother side, but if you can earn, you know, increase your ability to earn income, you can really progress that a lot quicker. There are these different aspects of it. And the way that you can do that is by, well, of course, for free, there's YouTube, there's podcasts, there's, Google. You can Google and learn literally whatever that whatever you'd like. But then there's also, you can buy courses, you can buy books, and these are investments in yourself and your education. You can sign up for that yoga class because it is, you know, both physically and mentally, it's going to help you when you've got a new sort of culture around you. There are, there are so many different, you can hire a coach or an expert to help really collapse the amount of time that you would normally take to get from point A to point B. So there are things that you can really do to improve your life, and there are ways and methods that you can use your money to get there.
So I know you've seen, Chris, people make all types of mistakes. I mean, and I want to remind people, when it comes to making financial mistakes, that doesn't mean it's the end of the world for you. People have made financial mistakes and have recovered. There are stories, and there are very famous people that ended up coming out of bankruptcy. Their business went bankrupt. They personally went bankrupt. I'm divorced. There are people who have they lost their marriage on business. I did not, but there are people who have done that. There are sadly people who alienated their children along the way, but they were able to circle back. Lots of mistakes. I'm a big fan of today is a new day. If you've made mistakes, now's a good chance to go and try to do some repairing and move forward. You can't fix every mistake. It's not possible. I mean, financially, if you bankrupted a company or alienated your children, maybe you can work on that with your children, and the company might not be an opportunity for you to go back to. But what are some mistakes, Chris, since you've been around a long time, that you see, and what kind of advice do you give on a very personal level for those?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I think that on a deeper level, just a lack of presence and too much just sort of being in your head thinking about, you know, even too much thinking about the future or too much thinking about the past is one of the biggest mistakes that you can make throughout your whole life. If you're constantly just thinking about tomorrow or yesterday, you're never really getting to enjoy life as it actually exists. And you can go your whole life. Some people die without ever really, you know, just enjoying life for what it really is, enjoying your relationships and the time that you get to spend with your friends and family. You know, if we're just constantly, especially now with the world as crazy as it is, it can be very tempting to sort of just get caught up in it and constantly be sort of anxious or wonder about what's going to happen. And the reality is that, you know, life's been going on for a long time. It's going to continue to go on. And like you said, Elliot, if you just take it day by day, that's all you can really do.
Okay. So I know you've talked to millennials and spent a lot of time with millennials. And I know that you have a little bit of a blackjack background. So it's funny, millennials, many millennials, I don't want to speak for all millennials, but many millennials equate the world of my world of investing, the world of blackjack, the world of Las Vegas, the Indian casinos, they're all kind of the same and they're not, but that's how they put them together. What have you learned along the way that you teach millennials and give them better advice on kind of life and, you know, playing the roulette table on blackjack and holding it 15 is not the same thing as building a portfolio and working towards your retirement?
Yeah. One of the single biggest mistakes, and I've made this mistake as well, is confusing, thinking that because you are buying something that other people invest in, that you are now automatically also investing. You know, the easiest example is people that think every stock that you buy is automatically an investment. And if you don't understand the company, if you don't understand the market and the risks associated with it, and maybe in a couple months you sell that stock because the price didn't go where you thought it would, you are not investing. You are gambling. And just because you bought a stock does not mean that you are investing. And similarly, like you mentioned, so I have this background in being a professional blackjack player where there is only one correct play for every possible hand. There's only one correct amount to bet for every count. And so you can actually play like a computer, very different than, let's say, a professional poker player who I think, you know, you probably could say that they're a professional gambler. But, you know, in reality, when you can manage a bankroll and count cards and play perfect blackjack, you can turn the edge in your favor and win over the long run. And I bring that up to say, once again, here is a vehicle in blackjack where 99% of people are gambling, but it's not about the vehicle. It's the knowledge that you have, the way that you're managing a bankroll, and your long-term thinking that really differentiates the two.
Great. So I know we talk about life goals. I mentioned that earlier on in the show. Let me give it, rephrase it in a different way there, Chris, and that's dreams. Because I know that people talk to you about dreams, and I don't mean dreams about, you know, winning the lottery. I mean, what are my dreams? I mean,
yeah,
my dreams at 27 are different than my dreams at 57 or 37. Or with little kids, you dream for them and want the best versus older kids. You hope they stay safe and make good decisions. And they're all different dreams. But, you know, in a financial advisory world, my world that we come from, it's so important that we help people identify those dreams, those financial aspirations. What does that mean? And let me give you some examples of that if I could, and I'd love for your comment on that. And that is, if I'm, you know, our typical client in our world is 50 to 70. That's not every world, but that's your most typical client in the world. They're pre-retirees or just retired. They want to do something with their money. They get it and so forth and so on. And they have kids. Some of them have young kids and their dream for the young kids, I want to put them to college. And that's about where the dream ends. I want to put them to college. They have adult kids and are thinking, I want to leave my kids some money. I'm very involved with my church. I'd like to leave them money. For me, I've got a charity that I would like that charity to outlive me, to deal with stress of teenagers, stress and depression of teenagers, because I have a 19-year-old who sadly took his own life. And that's an important concept for me. And that's my dream. I had to leave the world a little better place. But when you're talking with people and they've got these dreams or they don't even have a dream, how do you get them to have a dream? And then how do you get that dream, once they give it to you, into some form of reality? Because we know that so many dreams are in la-la land and they're not grounded at all. They have no sense. They're never going to be hit. I mean, I always thought that I would be the next Joe Namath of the New York Jets. I've got his uniform hanging up. It could have been, should have been, if I was 6 inches taller with a slightly stronger arm, maybe I had that opportunity to do that. But, you know, if I just went through my life thinking, boy, did I miss out on that? That's a dream that's not based in any sense of reality at all.
Yeah.
even though it's a nice fantasy, and maybe in my fantasy league I could have done it. How do we get this grounded, and how do we develop some really good positive dreams for people?
Yeah, I think the first part is probably the most difficult for people to really just even start dreaming. I remember having conversations with folks years ago, just asking them, you know, what do you really want to do in life? And, you know, not just in the next 30 years, where do you want to be, but even the next, you know, 5 or 10. And this happened numerous times where they would just respond, I don't know, I'm kind of just stuck. I'm destined to sort of just go work a job that I don't really necessarily hate, but don't love. And this is my life. I'll probably get married and have kids. And so I think, yeah, it's honestly, I don't know how to answer that first part, how to get people to start dreaming. You know, I can ask strong sort of thoughtful questions, but at some point, I think you've got to recognize that your life is what you make it. And you have a lot more control than you think that you do. In terms of taking action on those dreams, well, once you have some sort of, and I don't want to say realistic, right? Because you can set the most extraordinary goals for yourself, or the, you know, whatever it might be. I think it boils down to taking it day by day and making the most strategic decisions that you can with the resources that you have, whether that's resources of your money or your time or your network, whatever those things might be. Recognize what resources you have available to you and be strategic with them. Meaning, like, you know, don't just have that dream and hope that it's one day going to, you know, come to fruition. You've got to take an active role in that, you know, on a daily basis. What am I doing to actually move forward and live the life that I want to live?
So, Chris, let me be a little self-serving with what you just said, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So we wrote a book. I wrote it with, I'm going to hold that up, called Mission Matters, with Adam Torres, who is an author out of LA, very successful. And it's tips to success. We're giving these away for free. So if you reach out on my phone number, 925-314-8503, or Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at Prosperity Financial Group, we'll send you one for free. I'll sign it. We'll do all of those things. And maybe in 30 years, my signature will be worth $10 or $20 or whatever. Or maybe it'll be worth a lot more. We're doing that because, and we wrote this book, I wrote this book with Adam, and other people have written in it too, because one of the missing links out there, as you know from all your experience, is personal mission. How do I succeed? There was a wonderful book I read early on by Og Mandito called The Greatest Salesman in the World. And I get it. It's not politically correct to say salesman anymore. That's the book. It comes from, I believe, the 1940s or 30s. And it's one of my favorite books, because, and it's written in a very, very simple language, simple English, easy to understand. And it's probably $7 on Amazon. But it's about coming up with a critical mission in your life. So when we're dealing with pre-retirees and we're talking about that, what is that critical mission? Where are we going with this? And when you're talking to people sometimes younger, and you're talking to professional athletes whose egos have run amok, and again, it's not unique to the sports industry. I think in my 20s, I was pretty invincible too. How do you get these people grounded and get tips? So these are hard concepts to pin down. And folks like you who are in the trenches and getting, especially professional athletes, to understand that, hey, this money is not going to last forever. And your career doesn't last forever. My career could go on a long time. It's, you know, as long as I stay healthy and, you know, my mouth keeps working and so forth, it can go on a long time. But it's so important that people understand that we need to put a plan in place. And what's that plan look like? And that plan is as unique to you as it is to anybody. We call that fingerprint financial planning because it's unique to you, like your fingerprint is. And we have another phrase here that says, if it's money, it's personal. Because everybody's money is so personal. Even though we all judge ourselves by other people's wealth, we really need to be judging ourselves by our own wealth. So again, I'm going to go back to you. And when you're dealing with these people and you're trying to get time frames and get them to understand, because the average person doesn't understand time frames. And when you're 40, you're never going to be 65. It just doesn't happen. When you're 25, you're barely going to be 40. You just can't think in those terms. And my mother told me in my 20s, Elliot, if you just save $2,000 a year, every year for the rest of your life, and it grows at X%, And when you're 65, you'll have $1 million and that will be enough money to retire. And now with inflation, we need 3 million to do the same thing. Mm. It's totally different on that. And that's not just the simple thing, save 6,000 instead of 2,000. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
You know, and buying a house in the most expensive real estate here in California is very different than buying a house in Virginia and Maryland, like where you live, and buying a house in Tennessee, the hottest market, Nashville in the country, and, you know, where you get so much better bang for your buck, or Las Vegas or Reno or, you know, Texas, where you can really do a better job without spending money out of pocket. How do you get them focused and keep them focused? Because I just brought up about 9 different things in a heartbeat that you're bombarded with and like, oh my goodness, how do I get this person on track?
Yeah. It was something that comes to mind is something that Tony Robbins said one time. He said, most people underestimate what they can do and overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 10. And this goes back to that sort of lack of a, you know, realistic as, you know, a dream or goal can be, having not really a realistic goal and then thinking too short term. So that means that in terms of grounding yourself and in such a way that you can actually achieve these things that you want to, you really got to think, what could I do on a consistent basis? Doesn't have to be every single day. You know, I'm wanting to be fit. I'm sure like most, you know, listeners, they want to be physically fit. And so you generally want to eat healthy, but every now and then you can have a cheat meal. But what do you want to do in your life? What skill do you want to practice? You know, what habit do you want to practice on a semi-consistent basis, whether that's daily or every other day or weekly, that can help you get much further in the next 5 or 10 years than it would just by, you know, creating a plan on a piece of paper or a spreadsheet. That's really what it comes down to, is your habits and what you're doing consistently. And so in terms of turning that goal or that dream into a reality, something else that I've heard is this author of Atomic Habits, James Clear, he says, you know, you've got to have an identity-based goal first. You know, what kind of person would achieve the goals that I want to achieve? So he says, it's not about, you know, your goal should not be to run. The goal should be to become a runner. And when you identify with that, we are so closely, you know, we care so much about our identity and how we think of ourselves. Think about what is the type of person that would be living the life that you want to live, and what habits do they have that you can practice to get there yourself?
Great. So let me have a little bit of fun with you for a moment, because I know that you have a blackjack background. Mm-hmm. And so blackjack reminds me, and gambling reminds me, and I'm not a strong gambler, but gambling reminds me of the phrase FOMA, the fear of missing out. Mm. So you talk to people who come back from Las Vegas. We just use Las Vegas as an example. It could be.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you say, oh, I won $10,000 on a blackjack table. Oh, I won $5,000. I won $200. It's you rarely hear anybody talk about the big fish that got away. What did you catch? I caught a marlin, really. And so people want to gamble. And I always remind people when we're talking about gambling that they keep building new casinos and high rises, not for the winners, but for the losers.
Right.
And it's different in my world of equities and bonds and so forth and so on, because if you're in there long-term, it's very hard to lose when you're in long-term. Mm-hmm. But gambling in Las Vegas is not designed to be a long-term. A weekend is considered long-term. And so it's a different state of mind on gambling. But there are sets of rules, and there are sets of rules in my industry, like think long-term, you know, get good advice. Buy when everybody's selling. The Rothschilds always had that phrase, that basically paraphrase that you want to buy when everybody's selling and you want to sell when everybody's buying. And we live today, the last 3 months, everybody's been selling. So it's a great opportunity to buy, but not in the short term because it's super painful. So in blackjack, how do I become a winner in blackjack with maybe 3 or 4 simple rules, and not overstay my welcome and give it all back?
Yeah. So first of all, I hate gambling. And I just want to be clear. I don't recommend that anyone gambles. You know, I'm a math and a statistics guy. So I understand that the more I play, the more I will lose when I'm gambling, you know, spin of the roulette wheel or, you know, playing some craps. The game is quite literally designed for the casino to win. And it doesn't matter the short-term wins and losses. The more you play, the more you'll lose. So when it comes to gambling, unless you are, let me put it this way. Every game in the casino has a house edge. It's the average amount that you lose for every dollar that you wager. So in a game like roulette, you lose on average a little over 5% of every dollar that you wager, which is crazy because you can easily spend $1,000, 10 grand, 100 grand. You can easily lose, tons of money just spinning that wheel. With blackjack, the house edge is actually just 0.5%. So it's actually 10 times better than roulette. And it's the nature of the game that, whereas roulette, the spins are independent of each other. In blackjack, every card that comes out affects the ones that are remaining. And so because of that, the edge in blackjack fluctuates from positive to negative. And the only way that you're going to win at blackjack is if you can count cards, which is just a reflection of the edge, bet more when the edge is positive, and bet less when the edge is negative, and being able to do that without getting caught. That's the only way that you're going to win playing blackjack. Anything else is just gambling.
And that sounds like you're prescribing cheating a little bit there, but you're not.
No, it's using your brain. And there's no world where using your brain is cheating. Cheating in a casino would be, using a computer device or something to help you, whatever, keep track. But, if you're playing a chess match and someone says, hey, use this much of your brain, but not all of it, you can never sort of tell someone that they're cheating by playing as best as they can.
So should I play, if I'm trying to play the odds, are the odds better on roulette or the odds better on blackjack?
The simple answer is probably blackjack. However, that 0.5% edge, so that edge is standard with roulette. Like there's nothing that you or anyone's going to do that's going to change that average advantage. With blackjack, the only way that you're even going to get that negative 0.5%, meaning that for every $100 you wager, you'll lose about 50 cents on average. The only way that you can minimize the edge to that degree is by playing perfect basic strategy, meaning that, for every hand that's dealt, there is only one correct play statistically for that hand. If you want to take one of those cards to the table, oftentimes the casinos sell them in the gift shops. You could take a basic strategy card with you. If you play perfectly and the casino has good rules for the blackjack table, nowadays they've got 6-5 blackjack rather than 3-2, and which is horrible. You should never play those 6-5 tables. But simply to answer your question, it's kind of a toss-up unless you are playing very well in blackjack.
Great. So, Chris, how do people reach you in the future?
Yeah, the easiest way is to shoot me a text, 240-630-0568, and either myself or my assistant will get back to you. You can also follow me on social media. I'm active on just about everywhere I can be. So Chris Allen Hanna, no H at the end of that, Hanna. That's where you can find me.
Great. So we've been talking to Chris Hanna. Very exciting. I want to thank you for doing this, Chris. He's a personal financial coach. If you've got questions, especially budgeting and living within your means, and for your children, I could see for my children in their 20s, I would love to hook them up with you because I wish I thought in my 20s what I thought in my 50s.
Right.
But I didn't. I wasn't mature enough and so forth. So that's where you come in handy. And it doesn't matter if you're in Maryland or Timbuktu, because we live in a virtual world nowadays, and that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this has been Meet the Expert. We've been talking about what's going on first in the marketplace. We live in interesting times, as we say, a lot of downward pressure, but we will get out of that at some point. And we've been talking about how to save money, how to make money without giving specific advice. So if you've got a question you want to reach us, or you'd like to receive our book, Mission Matters, we'd like to send it to you. And we're at Elliott, ELLIOT. At prosperityfinancialgroup.com. My direct line is 925-314-8503. And the website is prosperityfinancialgroup.com. Again, we'll just disclaim it. No specific advice was meant here. And so we'd love to hear from you. And we look forward to hearing from you again. So on behalf of Prosperity Financial Group and Chris, thank you and have a great day.